So we're on Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, Baba Kama. So Yaakov asks, the question is, what exactly is this Gemara doing? If Ayin Tachasai Mamish or not, or is it Mamon? Like, what exactly is the point of the Gemara? What's it trying to do? We already know from Masorah, I mean, like the Rambam says, Mipi HaShmua, we have a Masorah from Beis Din of Moshe Avenu down to Shmuel HaNavi, down to right from basically it's mamon. So why exactly does the Gemara have to go through all these, like, you know, arguments, cases, limudim? What's it trying to do? What's the point of the Gemara in a certain sense? So I think there's like two things, at least you could say, for why the Gemara is doing this. One is like Gemara's want to show that Torah Sheva'al Peh is not just like some. There really is, in a certain sense, shtei toros. There's Torah Sheva'al Sav and Torah Sheva'al Peh, and they're different from each other. They're not exactly the same. But nevertheless, like the Gemara wants to show that Torah Sheva'al Sav is built to be interpreted by Torah Sheva'al Peh. It's not like Torah Sheva'al Sav is unaware of how Torah Sheva'al Peh is going to reformulate it and to express its principles in practice. You know, in terms of leading the people, in terms of the actual practical system that people are going to live by. But Torah Sheva'al Sav is meant to be interpreted by Torah Sheva'al Peh. So it is its own framework, Torah Sheva'al Sav. There is the pshat of the pasuk, and it has like its own sense of what it's trying to convey, its own message. Like we said, like the absolute framework of Mishpat it's trying to convey. Nevertheless, like the Chazal trying to show you that the Torah Sheva'al Sav system itself makes reference to or implies the necessity of coming in with Torah Sheva'al Peh and interpreting it, reinterpreting it, and giving it a practical formulation. And that's not something that the rabbis came up with on their own and decided this doesn't work, but it was inherent in the system itself that's the that Torah Sheva'al Sav was one formulation, but is not the ultimate way that the law is going to be expressed. So you're just showing that this is not just like some reformulation, but rather it's the way it's supposed to be. You know, and it's an idea of an asmach to some degree. When you have an idea, you want to attach it to the Torah Sheva'al Sav to show that this is not just some idea you came up with, but it's an idea that's really in the Torah itself. So too, over here, you're showing that this idea of Torah Sheva'al Peh, of Mamon, is really in the Torah itself. It's not something that's really an alien idea, but it's just that there are these two perspectives, and therefore the Torah is catching both of them, one in Bechsav, one Baal Peh, but they're not really divorced from each other, but they're really related to each other, and the Torah Sheva'al Peh is giving you one framework and one perspective, but it's meant to be interpreted and translated into the idea of Mamon, that Mipi HaShmua that we have in the Sefer for, is the way it ultimately happens. That's one framework of the Gemara, of what it's trying to do and trying to show you that idea. The other thing is, and that's a nice idea, it's important. But the other reason, and the reason we're spending a little bit more time on it, is because these different arguments of how you know that, they show you something about why it's not really Ayin Tachasai Mamash. You know, it shows you, like, for example, the first one we did, the idea of kofar. You know, it shows you the idea that a person, you have rachmanis, you allow the person to buy his way out, to save his eye. It's really, like a kofar payment. But you understand the idea by ritzicha, the Torah doesn't tolerate that. So you get certain insights into why the Torah didn't leave it as Ayin Tachasai Mamash by Chovel, but by Ritzicha it did. You know, and as you'll see, the arguments over here, like Abai is going to give an argument, you're going to end up killing the guy if you take out his eye. The Gemara ultimately tries to reject a lot of these things and show that they're not fully convincing. But it brings out ideas of why it's not Ayin Tachasai Mamash. Why did Torah Sheva'al Peh come in and reinterpret what the Pashtei Dekra, what the simple interpretation that Torah Sheva'al Sav is saying? So it shows you the motivation behind behind it and the ideas involved in the Mammon and why the Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash didn't really work out as a practical system. You know, so you're going to get some insights. It's not just like how you know it, but it also shows you the motivation behind it, of the transformation from the Ksav to the Baal Peh. So that's really the benefit of this Gemara. Right. That's what I would say the two main benefits. Okay. So the next approach is by Hashem Bar Yochai. So his argument is, what are you going to do if a blind person knocks out somebody's eye? What are you going to do then? Or if somebody who has no hand chops off somebody else's hand, how are you going to do? Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash. So you'll say, okay, look, in that situation, you can't do Mamash. The guy has no eye. How are you going to knock out his eye? But what you'll do is you'll take Mamon in that case. Okay, well, that's Mishparecha Yilchem. Mishparecha Yilchem means you can't sometimes have Mamash and sometimes have Mamon. It's got to be one uniform system. Okay, sounds like a good argument. The Gemara says, who says that's the case? Maybe where it's possible to do Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash, you do it. And where it's not possible to do Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash, then you don't take Mamon. That would be a problem, Echanami. But you say Pater, because it's Yefshar. Rai Rashi says, Patrina le below Klum. We have a mishpat shava, o litol aver mamish, o liftor legamer. And that is considered mishpat echad yelachem. That is mishpat shava, because basically for everybody you do the same thing. Either you knock out their eye or you potter them. As opposed to if you were to say, in the cases where you can't knock out their eye by the blind person who blinds somebody else, if you were to take money from him, make him pay money in that case, that would be a problem, Mishpat Shava, Mishpat Echad Yelacham. But the Pater Megamri, it's not. Okay, so let's stop here and try to analyze that Gemara's question of Mishpat Echad. And then the Gemara brings a Raya to this idea by the Treifa Shaharat with Adam Zelman. So we'll take that up next. But first, let's see if we can understand, does that really make sense? Why is that? On a certain sense, intuitively, the Gemara's answer, or rejection of Rishon Bar Yochai's argument, makes no sense. Like, what would seem to be a bigger lack of Mishpat Echad, that everybody has the same justice, the same Mishpat is applied equally across the board? You know, the case where some people lose their eye, some people only pay the money because they can't do that, or some people, lose their eye and some people get away completely scot-free. They tell me that's Mishpat Echad, that's good, that's real, everybody's getting the same justice, it sounds almost worse. So what exactly is the Gemara's idea of Mishpat Echad such that it tolerates that when you're Patrim Legamri, that somehow is better than if he were to pay money? Okay, so it seems like based upon the Gemara's idea here is that Mishpat Echad Yilachem means you can't have, for the same crime, you can't have two different verdicts. Basin can't say, in certain situations, you're chayav Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash, and certain situations, you're chayav Mamon. That's a violation of Mishpat Echad, because that becomes the variability is inherent in the system itself. Then you're basically saying your system of justice is a variable system, where sometimes it produces result X and sometimes it produces result Y. But in the case of the blind person, so the verdict really is Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamash. That really is the verdict. The system itself doesn't have any variability. It's one system of justice that applies equally across the board. And anybody who knocks out somebody's eye, that's the verdict that he's chayef to have done to him. The only thing is it comes out that you can't actually kill him. You can't actually kill him. You can't bring the treifa case. Okay. You can't actually knock out his eye because he has no eye. So it's like Efshar. It's impossible to actually apply the verdict. But there's no variability in the system. There's an inability to apply a uniform verdict to every single case. That happens. And then Gemara's going to get into the treifa case to show you we have to be willing to tolerate the fact that you can't always execute the mishpat. But there's a difference between the inability to execute a uniform mishpat versus having a variable justice system where there's different verdicts intrinsic in the very system itself. That introduces a characteristic of variability in the system itself. It becomes a characteristic of the system. It's a variable system, it's not Shava. Sometimes it gives you a verdict X, sometimes verdict Y. But if it always gives you a uniform verdict, so that's the characteristic of the system is Mishpat Shava. It's the same for everybody. Now, when it comes time to apply it and execute the verdict, then you might have certain inability. But that doesn't characterize a system as a variable. It just, the world, the real world is messy. You can't always apply your abstract, uniform, universal system to every single case. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't work. The problem with Mishpat Echad is when the very system itself has variability baked into it by the fact that you give different verdicts depending upon whether the perpetrator has an eye or doesn't have an eye, then we'll come up with two different results. Again, that's why the Gemara says ultimately it's you can't argue that it's not ayin tachas ayin mamish from the fact that from the fact that there's a blind guy. What are you going to do to him? Right? Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was saying, well, you're going to have to do money, right? Right? I mean, why did he assume that? Why does he not like that? Right? I mean, what's his argument? I mean, the Gemara is rejecting it. Again, the burden of proof is always on the Amora, the Tanner, the Amora, who's trying to show you that it's not mamish. Because the Pasuk says mamish. So the burden of proof is always on them. And the Gemara is basically, forcing the issue, showing me you can't prove it, because I could argue just it's Yesha. But why intuitively is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai correct? Why is the Gemara's answer? I don't know what the right word is. I'm saying intuitively. Well, what's the problem with the Gemara's answer?
Any punishment whatsoever. While in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's case, he just assumes that that person would be punished with the fine. And because it's a fine, because it's the Mammon case and it has to be uniform, then he says it's uniform throughout.
Right. Exactly. Intuitively, right, like what Josh is saying, intuitively, it's like, well, you just let the blind guy get off entirely, at least do mammon, we should pay the mammon, the very least. And maybe you can't do an mamish, but at least just do mammon. This is like, what's more, in a sense, like what's more just here? That he should pay mammon or he should get off free because you can't do the ayin tachas ayin mamish? Like in a certain sense, like in terms of approximating the ideal of justice, what's the greater approximation of the ideal of justice would be, it's an approximation, but at least to pay mammon, to patrim legamri, I mean, that's further from justice. At least let the victim get some compensation, the perpetrator should lose something, So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is assuming in a certain sense that insofar as you're trying to approximate justice, what you would really do, if we really did ayin tachas ayin mamish, he's saying, if we really did ayin tachas ayin mamish in situations where you couldn't apply it, you would do mammon. Because it's like a real perversion of justice to not even do anything. The Gemara is just saying, and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, yeah, but that we know, even though that's like it's a reasonable system because you get the mamish, the full justice when you can. And when you can't, you do the monetary substitute. And they're like, it's like there's a certain sense of that's like the closest you can get to approximating the ideal of mishpat in this world. Where this world is difficult in terms of you can't always, not all theories are perfectly applicable, but that would be the closest approximation you can get. He's saying, yeah, but the point is, that we don't do that. The system is not like that. Therefore, it must be a Torah's holding. It's always one uniform system of mammon. Okay, that's fine. That's a nice argument that he's making. But the Gemara is just saying, that's like your intuition of what justice would be. You cannot prove, it could be if the Torah really wants mishpat echad yelachem, it really is committed to this idea of a uniform system internally, then, and the Torah wants ayin tachas ayin mamish. So then there's nothing contradictory about the fact that when it comes down to God, the guy is blind and you don't knock out his eye, it won't be mammon and it won't be ovi pater. It won't be a violation of mishpat echad because that's just an inability to apply a verdict. That's okay. That's not variability in the system itself. And you'll get ayin tachas ayin mamish and you can't really prove it. And it violates your intuitive idea of mishpat. And it's, you think it'd be better the other way, and then whatever, you can't prove that. That's your opinion. That doesn't mean the Torah has to go for that. The answer, Rav Shimon bar Yochai is not just saying, he's not missing the point. It's an argument. It's an argument that better, like what's the better system? Where you apply an ayin dach hazayin mamash when you can, and the other time the guy gets off completely free? Or is it, it's always mamon? Rav Shimon bar Yochai says it's much better to at least always do mamon, and insofar as you're not willing to compromise mishpat echad, then always do mamon, and that's the intuition. But the Gemara is just saying you can't prove that. Maybe the Torah would prefer to have ayin dach hazayin mamash whenever you could. And that's it. And then when you can't do it, it's pater. And the burden of proof is on Rav Shimon bar Yochai, not on the Gemara. You know, Gemara is just defending it. Okay, but like you could at least see, understand what's the motivation behind Rav Shimon bar Yochai's argument, why it makes sense. It's intuitive that better to have mamon across the board entirely. I don't know. I shouldn't say better. There's advantages and disadvantages of each, but I could see why he was motivated to say better to do mamon always than to have these situations where you can't do mamon because of the mishpat echa. Now you basically let the guy go off entirely free. Okay, if you didn't have Rashi, then you would have said that Rav Shimon bar Yochai's havamina was that mishpat echad means even if you potter him, that's a violation of mishpat echad. That's why I would have read the Gemara without Rashi, that he's saying it's going to be impossible, and you're going to think to potter him. But mishpat echad means mishpat shav lekolchem, and that wouldn't be an idea of mishpat echad. And then the Gemara comes back and says no. That really would be mishpat echad, and the machlokes of Rav Shimon bar Yochai and the Gemara is basically how do you understand mishpat echad? Would pottering somebody be mishpat echad? Okay, and then you'd have to, and then if you said that, then and I'm sure somebody learns that way. Sometimes when it's like you can see a svara, and if there's a way to read the Gemara, you can see. I imagine there's some rishon out there who learns that way. Okay, what would that svara look like? That'd be closer to what Yaakov was saying originally. Is that then mishpat echad would be the idea that you can't have two different outcomes. It's got to be the same outcome for the same crime, it's the same outcome. And then one guy losing his eye and one guy getting off in scot-free, that's a violation of mishpat echad. That's two different outcomes. You can't have that. Therefore, better must be that everybody pays mamon. Therefore, everybody has the same outcome. Okay, that would have been a way to learn it. Okay, that havamina was about mishpat echad, that even tur legamri is a violation of mishpat echad. Comes the Gemara and says, no, the violation of mishpat echad is only when there's variability endemic in the system itself. Okay. But the reason we didn't learn that way is because if you look at Rashi, Rashi throws in a few words there. He says, Kita shakata hechani kore v'chulu, this is Rav Shimon bar Yochai's argument. He says, V'chite mahacha nishkom amona atar amen mishpat shave. Right, so Rav Shimon bar Yochai understands that patrim legamri wouldn't be a violation of mishpat echad. He's just right away assuming that you're not going to want to do that. You're not going to want to potter legamri. You're rather going to want to take money. That's ridiculous. Why have a system where sometimes people get off entirely without any consequences when you could have a system where everybody suffers consequences for when they damage somebody else, right? Now, the question is a hybrid system of doing mamish as much as you can, and when you can't do mamish, then you should do mamon. Then he's saying that's in theory the best if you want to get approximate pure justice as close as possible. The problem is mishpat echad. Okay, and that everybody agrees is right, no matter how you learn, that's the problem mishpat echad. Money sometimes and mamash sometimes. So therefore he says it must be, it's money all the time. Right? But he's not even recognizing, I don't say recognize, but he's not willing to acknowledge that that's a legitimate possibility. Is sometimes mishpat and sometimes going scot-free. But not because of mishpat echad, just because it's ridiculous. Why make a system like that way? Then just do mamon all the time. You know, just do mamon all the time. Well, why would you do that? Right? See, I'm saying his havamina is you're going to take money. He's no havamina that you just let the guy go off. At least take money from the guy. That seems to be his havamina. The Gemara is saying, who says maybe the Torah, insofar as it demands mishpat echad, and the hybrid system is not a viable alternative. Now you're really stuck with two possibilities. Either always money, like you're trying to claim, or maybe the Torah would prefer doing mamish whenever you can, and when you can't, you can't. And that's like the question between the Gemaras. Like what would be, assuming mishpat echad prevents the hybrid system, what would be the better alternative? Okay, and the Gemara is just saying you can't prove it because maybe going for mamash as much as possible is worth it, even though some people get off. But I think the intuition of Shem Baruch is showing the intuition of what would be the problem. This would be the problem. If you demand Mishpat Echad, the problem with doing Ayin Hazayim mamash and why the Torah doesn't do it is because you're not always going to be able, sometimes people are going to walk out the door with nothing happening to them. And that's just like, it's like this what we discussed in the beginning of this year. That's like a problem with mamash. The problem with mamash is assuming Mishpat Echad, you're going to end up with people having no consequences. And that's a motivation for why Torah Baal Peh shifts to mamon to always doing in tashlum and always doing mamon, because then nobody gets away with it. There's always consequences to it, right? What's interesting is like how why the Torah is so bent on mishpat echad. Like, what is the philosophical underpinnings? What would be so bad if when it's mamish, and when it's yafshar, then you have a substitute of money? What would be so terrible? Why is that like in? I mean, we've exerced a custom that's not the way that it works, mishpat echad. But what is that idea of why that's so bad? It's a good question. I'm not sure if I have an idea for that. Yeah, it's possible you could say that it really is an injustice that some people get one outcome and some people get another outcome. Okay, it's not right. It's not just, right, that the blind guy who knocks out somebody's eye, that either outcome is unjust, that either he pays money instead of losing his eye. If everybody else in society loses their eye, that's real justice. And that's what we hold as, you know, the real justice. So that's what we do to everybody else. But to him, he just pays money. Or it's unjust that he gets away with it entirely. That's also, of course, unjust. Right? I mean, you know, they're both not just outcomes. Okay. But, you know, we live in a human world, physical human world, where you can't always apply like perfect justice. Okay. And we have to be willing to tolerate. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. It's Kimishbel de Lakim, like real justice is only done by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But our justice is imperfect, but they're both unjust in a certain sense. Okay. But why is the Torah would prefer Mishpat Echad Yelachem? According to at least the Gemara's conclusion here, right? Why would it prefer? Because it's one thing to have an injustice because of your inability to apply a just system. So if we have a just system, Mishpat Echad treats everybody the same, everybody Ayin Techazayim Mamish. It's just that you can't always apply that to the practical world. So then it's bad, but that's the limitation of pure justice based upon physical human reality. As opposed to where your very system becomes variable, so then the injustice becomes characteristic of the system itself. That sometimes the system does this to one guy, sometimes the system does this to a different guy, even though they both did the same thing wrong. Now you've introduced injustice as a character of the system itself, and that the Torah is not willing to tolerate. It would almost rather a larger discrepancy in the outcome from pure justice than, because that's just the way the world is. You know, you have to be willing to accept that to some degree, and it would almost rather have a, you could say this is to some degree, this is the machlokas. You know, well, would you rather tolerate a larger injustice in terms of the actual outcome or a discrepancy from what pure justice is, where the guy gets off entirely, as opposed to introducing an injustice into the system itself? I shouldn't say that's the machlokas. That's because the way Rashi learns is nobody wants to. Nobody's willing to do that. Mishpat Echad Yelachem means that you can bring injustice into your formulation of the laws. By having two different verdicts for the same crime, now you've made injustice a feature of the system of Mishpat itself that you can't do. Right? That you can't do. That nobody's willing to hold. You can't have mamon sometimes and mamish sometimes. Rather, what you have to do is create a uniform system which you apply as much as you like. Yeah, sorry, you apply whenever it's possible. Okay, so either that means mamish, and then sometimes you can't apply it, or it means mamon, and then mamon is, it's, in a sense, it's further from the absolute system of justice, but on the other hand, you can always apply it. You know, so there is this balance of which is the greater approximation of true mishpah, having mamon be applied all the time or having mamash be applied whenever it's possible. And that's the question of Shem Rechai versus the Gemara. But nobody's willing to tolerate introducing an injustice, of a mishpat that's not shava as a characteristic and feature of our system of mishpat itself. That you can't do. That's mishpat echad yelachem. That can't be done. You can't have this hybrid system of mamish versus mama. Okay, so one more time to the Gemara's, the Havamina Maskar, Rav Shimon Yochai versus the Gemara. Is both Rav Shimon Yochai and the Gemara understand that you can't have a hybrid system? Because of Mishpat Echad, you can't introduce an injustice into the system itself. Okay, good. Now the question is, given that that's the reality, and the fact that the world is messy, now you're left with two choices, and you have to choose which one is better, which one is closer to true justice. We'll create a better approximation. Do you want to have everybody suffering consequences, but the consequences are mammon, not the perfect justice, but at least it's being done across the board and nobody gets away entirely? Okay, that's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's preferred system. And the Gemara says, no, maybe perhaps the Torah would prefer to have pure justice being done wherever possible, and wherever it's not possible, yes, the person is going to get away entirely. So in those few cases where you can't do it, there will be a greater discrepancy in those few cases between true justice and the actual outcome. As opposed to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's case, is like the discrepancy is always smaller, but it's all the time. You never have pure justice. You never have the ideal system ever being implemented. You always have a substitute system, but at least it's applied universally. And nobody gets away entirely. There's always a partial discrepancy with pure justice, but never a total discrepancy. But the Gemara is saying that's not obvious. Maybe the Torah would choose to have a majority case have the pure justice being implemented. And even though you have to tie in a majority and a minority of cases, there the outcome is totally disparate from pure justice. And you know, those are each, you know, you have to choose, and it's not obvious. It's not obvious that you can say with certainty the Torah must choose the case of mammon across the board. That's not obvious because, you know, in a certain sense, it's true everybody's consequences, but you're always deviating from justice in that case. Well, if you sometimes, in majority of the cases, you do mamish, beautiful. Now it's true. You'll have to tolerate a further greater discrepancy than Rav Shimon ever has to tolerate, guy getting off entirely. But whatever, it's a minority of cases, and we're willing to do that to satisfy pure justice. But again, both positions, according to Rashi, both positions are not willing to tolerate the hybrid system because there you're really introducing a hybrid system, a non-mishpat shava characteristic of the system of halacha that you can't do. The idea of mishpat echad is, yes, it's derived from the idea of ger, but the idea is that you don't treat different people. Justice applies equally to everybody. That's like a key feature of justice is equality, that it treats everybody the same. Now the outcomes might differ based upon, like we said, the messiness of the actual world. But in a key system of aspect of justice is that it treats the ezrach and the ger identically. It treats the blind person and the person with sight equally. That's part of mishpat. To have a system which treats different people differently, that's unjust. That's an unjust, that's lacking a key feature of mishpat, of shava, of kakaton kagadol. You know, like we don't, the noble, the rich person, the poor person, the blind person, the person with sight, the foreigner and the native, mishpat treats them all the same. That's part of justice. And then it's true, it's derived from the ger, but it's a broader idea of a feature of a system of justice, is that it can have these inequalities built into it. You might have problems applying it equally, and that's just the reality of the world, but you cannot build into the system inequality. That would be a corrupt system internally, and that's no good. That you can't have. Okay. So let's move on to the Gemara's Raya. So how does the Gemara have a Raya that where it's efshar, it's impossible, Mishpat Echad just says you can. Mishpat Echad says that basically you pater the guy and there's not a violation of Mishpat Echad. Okay, so it says from the case of Treifa. Okay, I'll say this. Right, for the case of a Treifa, so if a Treifa kills somebody, Okay, so he doesn't get killed. Because the witnesses who tell you that the Trefa killed, let's make Reuven the Trefa, right? So Reuven kills Shimon. Reuven's a Trefa. He has some mortal wound that he's going to die within a year, whatever it is. So now the witnesses who see Reuven killing Shimon, their Eidus is no good. Why? Because it's Eidus Yateyach Alazima. That they can't become Eidim Zomim, that if two other Eidim come and say to these Eidim who saw Reuven claim to see Reuven kill Shimon, they say, Imanu Hayisim, you were with us. So normally the punishment is to the Eidim Zomim, Vasisa Alam Kasher Zaman Lasas Lachiv, that you basically do to them what they try to do to Reuven. So they wanted Reuven to get killed, therefore they should get killed, right? The problem is, right, so it's almost like attempted murder on Reuven. And by Eidim Zomim, the Chiddush of the Torah is, even though they didn't actually kill somebody, the attempted murder itself, we kill them for that. The only thing is, if somebody were to kill a Trefa, you kill a Trefa, you're not Chayev, right? If a Trefa kills somebody else and Beis Din sees him, you don't need to aid them, you'll kill the Trefa. But if somebody kills the... If somebody kills a treifa, then you, because you just say gav katila katal, the guy is going to die anyway. It's not, you're not chayiv misa for that. Don't do it, but you're not chayiv misa for that. So these eidim zomim wouldn't be killed. Okay, so that comes out that basically it's eidus yatiyachal azimo. So that their eidus, they have like nothing at stake. Even if they lie through their teeth and imanu yisim, they weren't even there, and they attempted to get Reuven killed, and we find that they're total liars. They suffer no consequences because. Because they tried to kill a trefa. So therefore, that's Eidus Yatiyach Lazimo, where there was no consequences for them, and that's not good Eidus. And since that's not good Eidus, is the point here, since their Eidus is no good because they're not on the hook, they wouldn't suffer any consequences if they were lying, then since it's not good Eidus, then therefore we don't even kill Reuven based upon their Eidus. Because their Eidus is lacking a key component of Eidus, that it's Eidus Yatiyach Lazimo. And since the Trefa, Reuven the Trefa, there's no Eidim testifying to us that he's killed the Shimon, so then Reuven's going to go off, right? And now the Gemara is saying, Mishpudechad Yelechem, how could it be that if a regular person kills a Shimon, that regular person dies, Nefesh Achas Nefesh, but now if Reuven the Trefa kills Shimon, he's going to go free because the Eidus is no good? Oh, Mishpudechad, Yipatim Legamri. Okay, that's the Gemara's Raya. A little complicated, but so far so good. Okay. Rabbi Kiva Eger doesn't like this Rashi. Okay. He says, it's kind of like this. He says, Megillah Nashas, he says, Vikashali, Kivan do Eidus Yat Yachalazimo. Right? Once you're going to tell me that this Eidus, the Eidim against Reuven is Eidus Yatel Chazimo, right? They wouldn't be, because they wouldn't have any consequences. Lo Mikri Eidus. So they're just not good Eidus. It's no good. V'amrinan, Shema Be'emes Lo Harog. And we say, maybe in truth, he didn't really kill him. You don't have good Eidus here. So how do you even know Reuven killed Shimon? Maybe Reuven didn't kill Shimon. And these Eidim are liars, because you don't trust them, because there's no consequences for them. Right? And well, why do you need, what's the simple svar why you need Eidus Yatiyach Lazimo? Or what's the simple svar? Okay, we'll come back to that. Imke, my prachinan, Ashab Mekai Mishpurechad. Of course it's Shab Mishpurechad. El de Patrin, they like Eidus, the Harag, but Sarchian. He's saying, look, you Mishpurechad, every time a guy kills with Eidim, we kill them. That's the Mishpurechad. Now you tell me if a guy killed, but we don't know about it, so it's not Mishpat Echad. Who says he killed? No, right? It's like every time we know a guy killed, we do Mishpat, we do Nefesh Nachas Nefesh. So now you give me the case of the Trefa. The case of the Trefa means, according to Kiva Eger, he's saying, since the Eidim who are telling you is Eidus Yatiyach Lazimo, it's not a good Eidus, and basically we don't really know that Reuven killed Shimon. So of course we're not going to kill Reuven. So there's no lack of Mishpat Echad. You can't prove it to me when we have Eidim that the blind guy, Reuven, the blind guy, knocks out Shimon's eye. Then now you're going to say, okay, Reuven, sorry, sorry, Shimon, we can't do anything to Reuven. Reuven, you get to go free. There we have Eidim. We know very well what Reuven did. It's Eidus Atayach Lazimo, because if those Eidim were Zomim, we'll knock out their eye, right? But here the Eidim are good. But now we're not going to knock out Reuven's eye because Reuven's already blind. But I mean, that's really, you're patering him legamre. You're really basically making it like, maybe that is a violation of Mishpat Echad, where you patered him legamre. And the case by the Treifa is no raya whatsoever, because there you simply don't have Edus. What's Rashi, how's Rashi interpreting the Gemara such that this makes any sense? That's Ricky Vega's question. Okay, so we would like to define this machlokas between, or really just answer Ricky Vega's question on Rashi, right? So, okay, his Tzarchian, is it Lechor Tzikikasha, is what kind of Raya is this case of the Treifa? Or how does Rashi think this makes any sense? Edus Yad Yechal Mezim, you don't have any Edus. And therefore, of course, the guy gets off the Gamri. Okay, just 2 points of clarification. One is, if somebody kills a tree, somebody kills a tree for the Nachayv Misa, because Gav Ketila Katol, the tree is essentially like a dead man. So therefore, that's not lacking in Mishpat Echad, the fact that if you kill a regular person, you Chayv Misa, if you kill a tree for, you're not Chayv Misa, because if anybody kills a tree for, they're Pater, because it's lacking in the Maisa Ritzicha. You're not really killing somebody in the same sense, because the tree is half dead anyway. Okay, he's on his way to dead, and that's not fully a Maisa Ritzicha. Okay, that's point one. That's why the Edim Zomim, you wouldn't kill the Edim Zomim, because all they're trying to do is kill a Treifa. Right, and even if they kill the Treifa, you wouldn't kill them. So certainly for attempting to kill a Treifa, you're not going to kill them. Okay. The other point of clarification is just that if the Treifa were to kill, and we would know about it, like if he killed in front of Beis Din, so then Beis Din would kill him. Right, because it'd be, I think the Gemara learns, would be after Rami Kebecha. And he's a dead man. Well, he's not really dead. We'll make him more dead. You know what I mean? So it's not going to be, we'll figure out how to kill him. So so intrinsically, you could kill a Treifa for killing somebody else for a murder. You don't say the fact that he's going to die in a year from now, we're not going to kill him. We'll kill him right now. The problem, the reason why we don't kill him by the case of where it's only witnesses, is that the Eidus is Yat Yechal Azimo, and we don't have good Eidus that he killed somebody. That's why we won't kill the Treifa. But if he killed in front of Beis Din, Beis Din will kill him. Okay. Again, it's from different Xeris Akasav here at the Rabbi Kebecha, and there's room to maneuver. I'm not going to go in that direction, but I saw some Achronim Rishonim wanted to use that. It's a different Xeris Akasav and try to answer Rashi that way, and I don't know. But I'm not going to go in that direction. Simple pshat, the Treifa kills somebody, he's Chayv Misa. Okay, but if he would have been Chayv Misa if you had Edim. But you don't have Edim because the Edim is Yat Yechal Zimo, because these Edim are just trying to kill Treifa, and you wouldn't kill them for that. So you can't have them with their Edim killing Reuven, but they themselves are not on the hook. Okay, so again, just to repeat the thing, we'll leave the problem for tomorrow. Okay, a Treifa that kills somebody, he's a murderer, and you're going to kill him. You're not going to let him walk around killing people. That's for sure. But if somebody kills a Treifa, that person is not really Rotzeach, because the Treifa is this half-dead guy. Okay, so then, now these Edim Zomim, if they were really lying, what they would have been trying to do is kill a Treifa, so therefore you're not going to really kill them. Okay, since that's the case, it's Edus Yatiach HaLazimo on their Edus, and therefore there's no Edus, and now this Treifa, in theory, there's no Edim that he killed, the Reuven killed Shimon, therefore he's going to go free. Right, that's the Gemara's, in theory, his point, and you see, no problem of Mishpat Echad, even though he killed somebody, he gets still getting any, and he's Pater Legamri because there's no Edus, Edus Yat Yechal Zimo. So you have a case of a guy who kills somebody, but you don't do Nefesh Techas Nefesh, right? Because he and he's Pater. Rabbi Kiviger's question is on the way Rashi explains it, and this is the key point, is you don't have Edus. Edus Yat Yechal Zimo. What's the whole point of Edus Yat Yechal Zimo? To some degree, this is the Havim, this is Rabbi Kiviger's assumption, is that we don't trust Edus, we don't just trust two Edim who come along and say Reuven stole money, or Reuven hit Shimon, Reuven killed Shimon. Why do we trust the Edim? There's a few factors. One is there's two of them and they corroborate each other, the Drishas and Chakiras, right? But the other reason is because their neck is on the line. Like part of the system of checks of Edus, which gives the Edim Nemanus and credibility, is the fact that there's consequences to them if they lie. That if you're testifying in a murder case and we find out you lied, where you weren't even there and you testified, then we're going to kill you. So it just prevents. It's a method of making sure these edim are telling the truth. Okay, and when you have an edus where there's zero consequences, so how do I know they're not just trying to get Reuven killed? The two edim got together. They made up a lie that Reuven killed Shimon, and they just want to get Reuven killed. And they're not afraid that if they're found out to be liars, that they're going to be killed because there's no consequences. He's just a trefa. And therefore, I say, I don't really trust these guys. That's what Kivega's question is. It is the simplest way to interpret. I'm just giving you a little hint. Maybe there's another way to interpret. But the simplest way to interpret Edish Yetiach Lazimo is that it's not Neman. Part of the whole credibility of witnesses is the fact that their neck is on the line if they're found out to be liars. And if I don't have that credibility because there's no threat of punishment to them, then I don't trust the Edis to begin with. Then Rekivega's kasha is unanswerable. So now what are you going to do? So now it comes out, I don't have any edim that Reuven killed Shimon, or the edim I have, I don't trust. So now what's the Gemara's Raya? That I'm unaware of a murder and he doesn't get, I'm unaware that Reuven killed Shimon and I don't kill him? Of course not. Mishpat Echad, maybe Echanami, if I knew that Reuven knocks out Shimon's eye and I don't knock out Reuven's eye because he's blind, I just let him go to Gamri, maybe that would be a violation of Mishpat Echad. Because you're just letting people go completely when you punish others. But the case by the Trefa is not a riot, because by the case of Trefa, there's simply no knowledge that Bezin has that Reuven killed Shimon. If we knew, like in front of Bezin, we would kill Reuven, but we just don't have any witnesses. So how are we supposed to know? Therefore, we potter him, not because we're just pottering a murderer, because we are unaware whether Reuven actually killed Shimon or not. So what kind of riot is the case of Trefa, the way Rashi's learning, Edish Yetiach Lazimo? That's the problem Kivega's asking Rashi. Okay? And what we have to do is we have to see when Rabbi Akiva asks a question, you know, the general method for answering his problems, and they're very hard problems, is that you have to see, is there a premise? What is the premise that he's making such that we could say Rashi's disagreeing with that premise? You're not going to, like, his logic is sound. He's not making a mistake in logic, but there is a premise that he's assuming that if you change that premise, you might be able to answer the Gemara according to Rashi.